Thanks, Gary, and good afternoon and welcome everyone to our 2021 half year results presentation. I'll start by providing an overview of the bank's first half highlights and then hand over to Louise, who will take you through the financials in some more detail. If we turn to page two, I'm delighted to report a second consecutive quarter of both underlying and statutory profit. This is very much due to our relentless focus on delivering the plans and commitments that we have set out. As anticipated, 2021 is not only the midpoint of our original five-year turnaround, but it's proving to be the step change or the pivotal year in that story, where we return this bank to sustainable profit. Our disciplined approach to cost, combined with taking opportunities swiftly as they arise, means that we are reporting a statutory profit of 21 million pounds and an underlying profit of 13 million pounds, which combined with a reduction in risk-weighted assets from the simplification of the balance sheet, has increased our CET1 ratio by 90 basis points to 20.1%. The quality and resilience of our loan book means that we're able to revise our asset quality ratio guidance in light of the improved economic outlook, and we remain firmly on track to deliver our full year guidance, and as I've said, crucially, returning the bank to full year sustainable profitability in 2021. The last 6 months has been a very busy period in our retail business, with gross residential lending of 3.1 billion pounds, resulting in net lending of 1.8 billion pounds, equivalent to 10% mortgage balance growth since year-end. Gross lending has nearly doubled year-on-year, and although the market has been far more buoyant, we have also increased our market share in this period. The balance sheet growth is not only at improved margins, but also improves the duration of our book, with a greater mix of five-year mortgages, around 70% of completions this year being five-year, versus around 50% in the first half of 2020. Looking forward, our pipeline remains strong with 1.5 billion pounds of mortgages at an average margin of approximately 200 basis points. This, combined with our continued focus on liability pricing, gives me confidence with respect to our net interest margin guidance at the middle to upper end of our range. In SME, I'm very proud of how we performed in the incentivized switching scheme, which concluded in the first half of the year. We welcomed over 10,000 new customers, which represents about 15% of total customers switching under this scheme, narrowly missing third place, coming in fourth overall. For context, our original expectation was to achieve a 6% share. We now have 94,000 SME customers. In the first half of the year, we continue to develop the range of products and services on offer, including a new mobile app, a business concierge service launched in partnership with Assurant, and a request to pay service called Incoming, launched in partnership with Bankify, which will support SMEs with cash flow management, including those that don't bank with us. We have also focused on the ongoing financial support of our customers, providing flexible options to repay Bounce Back Loans through Pay As You Grow, choices introduced in March. So far, 4% of Bounce Back Loans have been repaid in full, and 18% have taken advantage of the Pay As You Grow options. So we turn to the next page. We're receiving recognition externally. Earlier this month, both Moody's and Fitch upgraded our long-term credit ratings by one notch. Our Tier 2 and MREL senior debt continued to perform well in the secondary market, with our most recent 9% MREL issue in November 2020, now trading inside 5% on a yield to call basis. This is reassuring as we consider future capital issuances and the requirements ahead of the MREL deadline. And as the original ethical bank, our values and ethics are at the heart of what we do every single day. Our new campaign working alongside Refuge to raise awareness of economic abuse is a great example of the difference we can make in our communities. I'm very, very proud that we've been shortlisted at this year's Charity Award in relation to that campaign. I'm sure many of you are aware that we've been carbon neutral for 14 years now, At the start of 2021, I outlined that we plan to refresh our ESG commitments to continue to inspire and challenge progress in this area. I'm extremely delighted to confirm that earlier this month, we were awarded the best ESG rating for any U.K. high street bank from the leading ESG rating provider, Sustainalytics. If we turn to the next page, I'll talk to this substantial milestone in a bit more detail. Early in 2021, Sustainalytics undertook a comprehensive review of the way in which the bank manages or is exposed to ESG risks compared to a standard set of measures for our industry. This review results in a score. The lower the score, the lower the risk, or the better the ESG risks are managed. Following the conclusion of this review, we were assigned a rating of 9.2, which places us in the lowest risk or the best category, referred to as negligible risk, which is assigned to those with a score of less than 10. For context, we're the only U.K. bank in this category, the next best in our industry being a score of 15.2, using the same framework. The majority of U.K. banks are in the medium risk category with a rating of between 20 and 30. Now, this is a fantastic independent verification of our ESG credentials, and when combined with delivering a step change in our financial performance, further validates the direction of our strategy. We're refreshing our plans later this year to add further detail on the next phase of our ambitions. Next week, we launch our sixth values and ethics poll, which gives our customers the chance to have their say on the future of our ethical policy. We will use what our customers tell us to shape our approach in this area. I'll be back to wrap up today's call, the Q&A, but for now, I'm going to pass over to Louise to run through the financials.
Thanks, Nick. Good afternoon, everyone. Starting with the income statement on page five, we are reporting a statutory profit before tax of £21.4 million, compared to a statutory loss before tax this time last year of £44.6 million. This improvement is driven by the themes Nick has just highlighted and includes a non-recurring gain of £13.3 million in relation to a rebate of business rates on ATMs. Our underlying result this period is also a profit of £12.9 million compared to an underlying loss this time last year of £33.9 million. Total income has increased by 13% to £168 million, and within this, net interest income has increased by 17%, reflecting the growth in mortgage balances at improving margins. I will pick up some more detail on this shortly. We've seen an 11% reduction in other operating income, where 2020 included a non-recurring gain from the renewal of strategic partnerships and also reflects the reduced transaction volumes that we've seen during continued lockdowns. We've benefited from £4.9 million of gilt sales, which we also benefited from in 2020, but to a lesser degree. This year's gain of £4.9 million that I just mentioned is £3 million higher than this time last year. Operating expenditure has improved 9% or £15.9 million in comparison to the first half of 2020. The benefits of the restructuring actions are being realised in line with expectations. I will come back also to costs later in the presentation. When also considering the growth in income, we have driven positive jaws of 22%, a very encouraging result which we'll continue to focus on across the rest of this year. Looking at impairment, the £0.1 million credit is driven by an improved economic outlook and continued low levels of flows into default. The release of provision is mainly in the secured book, and we continue to have a low risk portfolio, and this is reflected in our asset quality ratio. The average loan to value on core mortgages remains low at 57.9%, with an average completion LTV in the period of 73.3%. Strategic change reported separately from the underlying result reflects those projects which were considered to be exceptional. The P&L expense in relation to those projects is reduced to £9.7 million from £15 million and in cash terms totals £17.1 million, down from £21.3 million in the same period last year. As we've explained previously, we incurred a higher level of exceptional project spend in 2020, notably as a result of separation. The spend we've included in the first half of this year is broadly aligned to our expectations, and we expect this to ramp up in the second half of the year. Non-operating income amounts to an overall net gain of £18.2 million, and this includes the 13.3 ATM business rates refund that I mentioned at the outset. The tax credit of £23.5 million reflects the change in corporation tax rate from 19 to 25%. This has increased the value of those deferred tax assets currently on the balance sheet. Later in the presentation, I'll give an overview of deferred tax assets that are not yet recognised. So turning to page 6 for more detail on margins and trends within mortgage completions. In the top left chart, you can see that our customer NIM has increased to 154 basis points from 151 basis points in the second half of 2020 and up from 141 this time last year. You can also see in this page that the increase driven from our mortgage rates and volumes has more than offset the drag from interest associated with the MREL issuance in November 2020. Looking at the bottom right-hand chart, you can see that in the second quarter of last year, of the total mortgages originated, 53% were on a five-year fixed tenor with a blended completion margin of 129 basis points. Today, of the 1.4 billion mortgages originated, the proportion of those longer-term five-year products has increased to 65%, and their associated margins have also increased by 90 basis points to 219 basis points. This gives some protection against any potential fall in margins in future. In terms of our mortgage pipeline, which stands at 1.5 billion, this shows a blended margin of approximately 200 basis points. The mix of tenor in the pipeline is moving towards a normalised level, and in the pipeline is more of a 50-50 split between five-year and two-year products. Finally, the bottom left chart highlights the continued reduction in blended cost of core customer deposits to 14 basis points, down from 21 in the last quarter of last year. So turn now to page 7, where we take a look at costs. Taking staff costs first, these have reduced in total by 4 million year on year. Actions to restructure in 2020 and continued simplification have reduced staff costs by 8 million compared to the first half of 2020. Variable costs, including performance or volume related staff costs, have increased by 4 million. Non-staff costs have also reduced by 12 million, and again this includes a benefit from branch restructuring in 2020, which contributes, along with other property portfolio actions, to 4 million of the reduction. The remainder largely reflects a number of management actions, most notably in relation to the review of our outsourced and third-party costs in light of the bank's simplification, as well as a reduction in marketing spend. As I mentioned earlier, our cost reduction progress remains in line with expectations, and whilst some performance-related and volume costs are increased, this reflects an overall improved bottom line and reflects driving benefits for the bank beyond 2021. For example, staffing to support increased volumes at today's strong margins whilst available. Briefly touching on strategic projects, spend in 2021 focuses on enhancing our SME franchise with the support of the Capability and Innovation Fund and simplification of our mortgage systems, which will drive improved customer journeys and further simplified banking future. As I highlighted earlier, the pace of spending on strategic change costs will ramp up as we move into the second half of 2021. By the end of the year, we will have completed our work supported by the Capability and Innovation Fund to greatly enhance our SME franchise, which is a future income driver for the bank. On the next couple of pages, I'll provide further detail on the bank's wholesale funding and overall liquidity position. Starting on page 8, our total blended cost of funds is 38 basis points, which is lower than the 56 basis points for 2020 as a whole. Customer funding remains the largest proportion of our funding mix at 86%, with a cost of funds of 17 basis points. Top left chart shows that wholesale cost of funds has reduced by 14 basis points to 175, reflecting drawdown of the low cost TFSME funding in the period, As you can see, we've drawn down a further £450 million across the first half of 2021. An additional £3 billion of undrawn TFSME remains available to the bank before the October deadline to support further lending across the remainder of 2021 and also 2022. Now, I won't dwell on page nine for very long, but you can see here that liquidity coverage ratio remains significantly above the 100% regulatory minimum. The reduction from 193% to 162% reflects deployment of excess liquidity into mortgage lending. As expected, our loan to deposit ratio has increased to 96% in the period. And again, this is largely a result of utilising TFSME to drive balance sheet growth. Finally, on encumbrance, it's a similar point. Our ratio has increased 1.2 percentage points to 22.1% due to the additional drawdown of TFSME in the period. Okay, so turning to page 10 to pick up on capital. As highlighted earlier, the CET1 ratio of 20.1% has increased by 0.9 percentage points. Reflecting attributable net profits in the period and a reduction in risk-weighted assets. The surplus to CET1 requirements, including the CRD4 buffer of 7.2 percentage points, is equivalent to approximately £330 million of CET1 resources. Our total capital ratio, including Tier 2 debt, at the end of June 21, is 24.6%. As you can see from the chart, this provides significant headroom to the minimum total capital requirements, equivalent to over £400 million of resources. The chart on the bottom left bridges the reduction in risk-weighted assets. Growth in core customer RWAs reflects net mortgage lending, which has been partially offset by improving house prices. A reduction in non-customer RWAs reflects the cash received in respect of the optimum disposal and settlement of the surrendered loss debtor. Together, this accounted for £165 million of the reduction, with the remainder predominantly related to the reduction in fair value of hedging instruments of £90 million. Legacy risk-weighted assets also reduce as the portfolio remains in runoff. As highlighted on the page, both the MREL and the leverage frameworks remain under consultation. However, the regulator has provided further clarity on both of these requirements for the bank. Firstly, latest news confirms our end state MREL requirements of 2x TCR with an end state binding date of the 1st of January 2023. And this is consistent with the requirements and date in our plan. Secondly, leverage will remain unbinding for mid-tier banks, which is positive news. Finally, in line with what we communicated in our first quarter presentation, our CET1 guidance remains subject to regulatory approval of our risk-weighted asset modelling. Turning the page now to slide 11, non-performing loans in total are just 30 basis points of total exposure, which is a 5 basis point improvement on our year-end position. Coverage has normalised following the write-off of SME balances, which were fully provided for. The bottom left chart shows an increase in the proportion of Stage 1 loans driven by the net lending in the period, with the corresponding proportion of Stage 2 reducing from 8.1% to 4.5% since year-end. Net impairment is a small credit in the period of 0.1 million, reflecting the net impact of an improved economic outlook, further evidence of low levels of default, and going in the other direction, the impact of balance sheet growth on expected credit losses. Given the strong underlying performance of our asset credit quality, we have upgraded our AQR guidance to 5 to 10 basis points for 2021, improved from 10 to 15 basis points, which were communicated at our year-end results call. Turning the page, as we continue to deliver a track record of sustainable profits, we've set out some background as to what this means at a high level for deferred tax. The bank has over £2 billion of historical losses off balance sheet, which can potentially be used to offset a proportion of future taxable income. The maximum tax value of these historical losses would equate to over £600 million. This remains dependent on future changes to tax rates, including the banking surcharge. As we start to benefit in future from recognising these assets, this recognition would impact P&L as a credit. The value in CET1 terms arises when the assets are utilised, which occurs over time. We will present more information on this when we conclude the financial year. And finally, on page 13, which we've included for reference, we have summarised our enhanced segmental reporting. We have now, for the first time, segmented our operating costs, and in doing so, provide further information here and in the appendix on our retail and SME businesses. I'm not going to talk specifically to the segments and their costs today, but this will increasingly feature in our presentation information. And with that, I'll now hand back to Nick to conclude.
Great, thanks Louise. On the final two pages, I will reconfirm our expectations for the full year. Firstly, on page 14, setting out our guidance. As I said at the outset, we have taken opportunities swiftly as they arise, and we increased our customer asset guidance earlier this year in Q1, reflecting the significantly increased demand for mortgages at improved margins, which also supported our 2022 customer asset update. Similarly, we improved our CET1 ratio guidance for 2021, reflecting the improved economic outlook. This improved outlook, coupled with a further quarter of evidence about how our portfolio is performing, has resulted in us now upgrading our AQR guidance for 2021, as Louise has mentioned. We remain confident of delivering against all of these measures for 2021, achieving at least the midpoint in the range. Our guidance in 2022 remains as presented in the first quarter, and whilst we now have certainty in relation to CP1420 and the removal of the individual risk weight floor, the impact of PS1120 in our secured risk-weighted assets remains subject to regulatory approval. However, our best estimate of these regulatory changes to risk weights remains that there will be a net neutral impact. We turn to page 15. We provide a recap here in relation to the commitments that we outlined at the start of 2021. To repeat my opening remark at the start of this presentation, I'm delighted that we, the relentless focus that we've shown on our plan is delivering the strong financial and operating performance that we've been able to take you through today. We've outlined excellent progress against each of these points, so I'm not going to go through them again. But as we look to the second half of the year, we will continue to focus on what matters to a wide range of stakeholders, refreshing our vision through the strategy review and listening to the perspectives of our customers about what matters to them ahead of our 150th year anniversary in 2022. We're looking forward to sharing the output of our October Investor Day. That's all from me for now. I'm going to hand back to Gary, and we'll open up for any questions.